Hello, folks. This is Will Aitchison with another special podcast. I know you guys are probably tired of hearing from me right now, but the developments in the area of police labor issues are coming so fast and furious that I want to get this information out to you. What I want to talk about today is the whole issue of what police reform legislation is looking like. We have three examples that I want to cover. The first is the executive order issued by President Trump today. The second is a bill that has been introduced in Congress by a number of Democrats in the Senate. And the third is the first piece of statewide reform legislation that has passed in the country. And that is known as Senate Bill 2217 from Colorado. We will be posting online the executive order from President Trump. Unfortunately, we can't post the Senate Democrats' bill because, believe it or not, it hasn't been printed. But we can tell pretty much what's going to be in it from the press releases, and so we will give you that summary as part of what we are posting. I wanted to post as well a bill that has long been promised by the Senate Republicans, but they don't even have a summary out yet, much less the entire bill. And then lastly, in Colorado, we will be posting the entire text of Senate Bill 2217. In addition to all that, I have put together a matrix, fairly lengthy matrix. It's 10 pages long or so, of the various provisions of these bills. And the reason that I'm doing this is there is reform legislation of one sort or another pending in a number of states across the country. But in particular, what happened in Colorado, I think, is quite important, because in Colorado, all of the forces were marshaled. And the idea was to set a precedent in Colorado that could be considered in other states around the country. And so I think we all need to know what's in that Colorado bill. And from time to time, I will do some editorializing as to some problems or issues I see, not just with the Colorado bill, but also with the executive order and what the Senate Democrats have announced. There's no good way to do this podcast from a structural standpoint. It's kind of hard to put all the topics together in a way that is meaningful. I know if I go through the executive order and then go over to the Senate Democrats next, we'll lose track of what happened in the executive order on the issue. So what I've decided to do is I'm going to go topic by topic and tell you how all three of these bodies of legislation, or in the case of the executive order, a decree from the president, how they treat particular issues. So let's start with body cams. I've just arranged these alphabetically. Let's start with body cams. The executive order doesn't talk about body cams one way or the other. Not an issue. So far, what we've seen from the Senate Democrats, they're not proposing anything on body cams. In Colorado, what came out on body cams is pretty darned incredible. The legislation mandates that all law enforcement agencies must issue body cams to every officer by July 1, 2023. I can just imagine the people in corporate headquarters at Axon, formerly Taser, jumping for joy when this bill was passed. There is no funding mechanism for those body cameras. They do refer, or the legislation does refer to a grant program that exists in Colorado, but they're not putting any money into the grant program. So it's pretty apparent that law enforcement agencies are going to have to find a way to not only purchase the body cams, but also to pay for what you're about to hear is going to be immense storage of body cam video and pretty incredible retrieval costs for body cam video. What else does that Colorado legislation say about body cams? First of all, has an activation threshold. Officers have to activate body cams whenever, and I'm going to quote, responding to a call for service or during any interaction with the public initiated by the peace officer when enforcing the law or investigating possible violations of the law. There's a modest exception for undercover work. So pretty much anytime the officer is doing pretty much anything, except maybe on a break, getting a hamburger or something like that, the officer is going to have their body cam on if they are responding to a call for service or during an interaction with the public. There are sanctions that are built in to the bill for non-compliance with that obligation to turn the body camera on. What are those sanctions? First of all, the sanctions are discipline up to and including termination and a one-year suspension of the officer's post certificate if the officer intentionally fails to activate a body cam. If the incident involved the death of a civilian, the revocation of the post certificate is permanent. What about disclosure of body cam videos? With some exceptions, all body cam videos have to be released to the public within 21 days. There's a little exception for videos that substantially interfere with or jeopardize an active or ongoing investigation. They can be withheld from the public for 45 days. But then, after 45 days, they have to be released, even if releasing them would substantially interfere with or jeopardize an investigation. There is a much broader exception for what the bill refers to as substantial privacy concerns. These are privacy concerns not on the part of the officer, but on the part of whoever the body cam would be capturing. Privacy concerns like interviewing victims or dealing with sexual assaults or nudity and medical information and the like. Privacy concerns, when you read the bill, you're going to see that's not very well defined. And it's going to lead some law enforcement agencies guessing as to what a substantial privacy concern is. If there is a substantial privacy concern, you don't get complete redaction, complete non-disclosure. Instead, you get redaction. So you're going to have partial body camera videos out there. That's body cams. Next, carotid holds and choke holds. And I know all of you are really tired of hearing people refer to carotid holds as choke holds. And we all know they're not. Okay, what do these bills say and legislation say about carotid holds and choke holds? First of all, the executive order from President Trump does not deal with carotid holds. And instead, it requires that credentialing bodies, I'll come back to that. There's a very complicated credentialing system in the executive order. It requires that credentialing bodies must forbid the use of chokeholds, and they define it, a physical maneuver that restricts an individual's ability to breathe for the purposes of incapacitation, except where the use of deadly force is allowed by law. The Senate Democrats would go further. They would ban both carotid holds and chokeholds. The penalty, or it's really a carrot, or maybe it's a carrot and a stick all at the same time. A local law enforcement agency would have to ban carotid holds and chokeholds or lose DOJ funding. Colorado bans both carotid and chokeholds, as you might expect. Civil rights investigation, our next topic. And I'll have to break this down a little bit in terms of investigation and litigation. Let's take investigation first, and then a little bit later on in the podcast, I'll come back to litigation. The executive order from President Trump doesn't say anything about civil rights investigations. The Senate Democrats would give to the Department of Justice subpoena power in civil rights investigations that are so-called pattern and practice investigations. And Colorado doesn't set up an investigatory system for pattern and practice investigations. Databases, our next topic. All three of these, I'll just call them all broadly legislation, even though I know the executive order isn't legislation. All three of these pieces of legislation deal with creating databases for or concerning law enforcement officers. First of all, the executive order says that the Attorney General's office is to create a database containing information about the terminations or decertifications of law enforcement officers, the criminal conviction of officers for on-duty conduct, and civil judgments against officers for the improper use of force. Those databases have to take into account resignations under fire, where an officer retires or resigns with an investigation that is pending. And then there is a curious sentence in the executive order. It commands the Attorney General to, and I'm going to quote here, take appropriate steps to ensure that the information in the database consists only of instances in which law enforcement officers were afforded fair process. What does that mean? I don't have any idea what the phrase fair process means. Is it due process? What is the quantum of process that is fair? How much process is fair? There's no answers to any of that. And theoretically, even though the executive order doesn't say so, theoretically, you would expect the Attorney General to fill in all of those gaps. And remember, in large swaths of the country, there is no due process, right? In those states without law enforcement labor organizations, where you don't have civil service or police commission protections, there's no due process. You're an at-will employee. You can be fired without any process at all. What does fair process mean for those employees? Just not clear. What happens if the local agency doesn't provide this information to the federal database? DOJ funding, Department of Justice funding, will be withheld. Lastly, the executive order calls for the regular public reporting of the contents of the database with the officers' names anonymized. What about Senate Democrats? They would require states to report all uses of force to the Department of Justice and to begin a, and I'm quoting here from a press release, and who knows what this is going to finally look like, but the Senate Democrats would require the Department of Justice to begin a federal registry of police misconduct. We'll have to see how that eventually turns out. Over in Colorado, there's going to be a statewide database that is going to be created. What's going to go in it? All use of force resulting in death or serious bodily injury, all resignations under fire, and get ready, hold on, all data related to stops and contacts, and all data related to the use of an unannounced entry by a peace officer for every stop, every contact, every use of force resulting in death or serious bodily injury for every police officer in Colorado. The information that is reported must include what is known as the perceived, or what is described as the perceived demographic information of the person contacted. And what demographic information is going to have to be reported? race, ethnicity, sex, and age. You're probably getting the feeling already that this Colorado legislation is going very, very far. What I can tell you is you should have seen the first draft. Do you know what was included in perceived demographic information that it would have to be reported to the state? Sexual orientation and transgender status. What happens if an officer guesses wrong about somebody's sexual orientation and that gets reported to the state? Thankfully, that stuff got deleted in the final version of the bill. Next topic, deadly force. Neither the executive order issued by President Trump nor the Senate Democrats' bill would deal with the use of deadly force. Not so in Colorado. They have changed the standard for the use of deadly force. What is going to be the new standard? Deadly force can only be used when, and I'm quoting, and I'm going to say it slowly, because in the back of your mind, you have to have Graham versus Connor's reasonable police officer standard. You have to have that firmly fixed. That's the standard everywhere in the country right now. It won't be in Colorado. So deadly force can only be used when, quote, necessary to effect an arrest or prevent escape from custody when the person is using a deadly weapon or likely to imminently cause danger to life or serious bodily injury. Only when necessary to effectuate an arrest when the person is using a deadly weapon or likely to imminently cause danger. Now, you read that, and the immediate reaction that you will have, I guarantee you, is that's the end of Graham versus Connor in Colorado. Because that encourages precisely the Monday morning quarterbacking that Graham versus Connor forbids and criticizes. It requires the officer to somehow know, somehow get into the mind of a suspect as to whether or not that person needs to be the subject of deadly force in order to effectuate an arrest. It doesn't turn on the officer's reasonable perception of the incident. It turns instead on what the officer may know or may not know. But here's where the Colorado legislation shows all the signs of a last-minute dinner that was cooked in haste. Because there are other places in the legislation that talk about when deadly force is justifiable. Here's another quote from the legislation. A peace officer is justified in using deadly force if the officer has an objectively reasonable belief that a lesser degree of force is inadequate. And the peace officer has objectively reasonable grounds to believe and does believe that he or another person is in imminent danger of being killed or of receiving serious bodily injury. Wait a minute. Isn't that sort of an awkward rephrasing of Graham versus Connor? What is the standard? And when you read this Colorado legislation, I kind of guarantee you, and you look at the deadly force sections, kind of guarantee you, if you ever saw the movie The Exorcist, there's that scene where Reagan, the young girl possessed by the devil, her head swivels on top of her torso. That's the way you're going to be. They're going to have a lot of straightening out to do in Colorado before this statute can ever be applied in a consistent fashion. The Colorado statute talks about another aspect of deadly force. It requires other officers to intervene to stop the unlawful use of force, and it punishes them. It's a misdemeanor violation not to intervene, and it's a possible felony violation, and I'm quoting, if supported by the evidence. End quote. We don't know what that phrase means at all. It's also mandatory discipline and permanent decertification. So other officers have to intervene to stop an officer's unlawful use of force. How do they know it's unlawful? If the test for lawfulness of the use of force is the perception of the officer using force, how can another officer on the scene share the same perception? As I said, a lot of work to be done on this standard in Colorado, because what they've got on their hands right now, what's been passed by both houses of the legislature and signed by the governor, is pretty terrible. Just terrible from the standpoint of drafting legislation. All right, next topic. And I know I'm moving through these quickly, but we got a lot of topics. The next one is Department of Justice certification and credentialing. This is only in the executive order, and it sets up an elaborate system that really doesn't exist in this country right now, where DOJ grant money, you know, the normal block grants that would go out to cities and counties and states, would only be payable to jurisdictions who are in the process of seeking appropriate credentials from a reputable, independent credentialing body certified by the Attorney General. We don't know what any of those terms really mean, right? What are appropriate credentials? What is the standard for receiving a credential? We don't know. What's a reputable independent credentialing body? I guess it's one that's certified by the Attorney General, but does that necessarily make it reputable? I don't know. What I can tell you for sure about this credentialing system that is set up is it's going to be big business. You are going to see law enforcement consulting groups formed, and maybe large ones formed, for the sole purpose of issuing this credentialing so that local law enforcement agencies can receive DOJ grant money. The president's executive order also creates some new grant programs, or would create them. It calls for the Attorney General to propose legislation to Congress to create new grant programs. And what will the grant programs be for? First of all, they would only be able to be received by credentialed agencies. And the grant programs would be for, and I'm quoting, to adopt and implement improved use of force policies, including scenario-driven de-escalation techniques, to aid with the retention of high-performing law enforcement officers and recruitment of law enforcement officers who are likely to be high-performing, to provide confidential access to mental health services for officers, and to provide programs aimed at developing or improving relationships between law enforcement and the communities they serve. That's going to have to be a whopper of a grant program or allocation by Congress, I would think. The one that struck me, because, you know, it has something to do with the public safety workplace, is that it is envisioning grants to be used for recruitment and retention. That is going to be really interesting to see how that gets played out. There are no analogous provisions in the Senate Democrats' bill or in the Colorado bill. Next up, indemnification. First of all, make sure we're all on the same page. What's indemnification? Indemnification is if an employee is sued for on-the-job conduct, the employer typically has an obligation to not only defend the employee, provide a lawyer for them, but also indemnify them. In some places, that's a requirement of state statute. Some states don't have statutes that actually require that, and there it is a feature of what is known under the law as agency law, where a principal, i.e. the employer, is obligated to indemnify the agent, i.e. the employee, for actions taken in the course and scope of employment. So that's what indemnification is paying damages, not just providing the legal defense. That's the defense side of defense and indemnification. It's paying damages. That is not addressed in the executive order or the Senate Democrats, but Colorado did. Hang on to your hats here. Colorado, as you'll hear me say in just a moment, in fact, I'll say it right now, the Colorado bill will create an entirely new way to sue police. It will allow direct lawsuits for violation of the Colorado Constitution. And not only will it allow lawsuits, if you have a prevailing plaintiff, somebody who wins, they're entitled to attorney's fees. What if the officer wins? They're entitled to attorney's fees, but only if they can prove that the lawsuit was frivolous. So the Colorado legislation creates this brand new way to sue law enforcement officers, and then it turns to indemnification. And it says employers are required to indemnify officers for damages assessed for violations of the Colorado Constitution. However, if the employer decides that the officer did not act upon a good faith and reasonable belief that the action was lawful, then the officer is personally liable for 5% of the judgment or $25,000, whichever is less. What if there's a disagreement between the employer and the officer as to whether the officer acted with good faith and reasonableness? The legislation doesn't say. And when I read the legislation, it looks to me like the employer can make the final decision as to whether or not the officer acted reasonably and in good faith. So what you've got set up in Colorado by this legislation is a system where officers look like they're going to be personally liable for up to $25,000 for this new cause of action of violating the Colorado Constitution unless their employers decide, apparently an unreviewable decision, that the officers acted reasonably and in good faith. Two predictions are very easy about this provision of the statute, right? One is you're going to see a new business crop up in Colorado of selling insurance for the first $25,000 in damages. Now, I'm not an insurance lawyer, and insurance lawyers may tell you, well, this may not even be an insurable risk because there are some types of civil causes of action, usually intentional torts, as they're called, where you can't get insurance because it's against public policy to issue that insurance. But to the extent that insurance will be allowable in Colorado, you can bet somebody's going to sell it. The second prediction you can make very easily here is that there's going to be a lot of people asking the question, why do I want to be a cop in Colorado if I'm going to have to pay $25,000 of a lawsuit against me when I acted perfectly appropriately in my mind and I just simply have a disagreement with my employer as to whether I acted in good faith and reasonably? Okay, moving on. Mental health. Only the executive order addresses mental health issues, and what it does is to command the Attorney General. Bill Barr got a lot of work with this executive order today. Commands the Attorney General and the Secretary of Health and Human Services to, and I'm quoting here, identify and develop opportunities to train officers with respect to individuals suffering from impaired mental health, homelessness, and addiction. They are also supposed to, they meaning the Attorney General and the Secretary of Health and Human Services, they are also supposed to identify opportunities to increase the capacity of social workers to work directly with law enforcement agencies, to work on developing guidance with respect to co-responder programs where social workers and mental health professionals work alongside police officers. No word on funding for any of that. Next up, military-grade weapons. The executive order does not deal with it. The Senate Democrats would restrict the transfer of military-grade weapons to state and local agencies. We don't know what that means yet. Doesn't say end the transfer. It says restrict, and the Colorado legislation does not deal with it. No-knock warrants, and the president's executive order does not deal with the issue of no-knock warrants. The Senate Democrats have announced they want to stop the federal use of no-knock warrants and condition Department of Justice grants on recipients not using no-knock warrants. The Colorado bill deals fairly extensively with no-knock warrants. I'll come back to that a little bit later, but basically it says we want those things to stop. Okay, police contacts. This is only in the Colorado bill, and this is another one where I read it and thought, I simply cannot believe what I am reading. And have they thought about the impact on law enforcement? So here's what the legislation says. The legislation starts by saying that an officer must have a, and I'm quoting, legal basis for making a contact, whether consensual or non-consensual, for the purpose of enforcing the law or investigating possible violations of the law. What in the world does that mean? What does the phrase legal basis mean? It doesn't mean, I don't think, probable cause. I don't know if it means reasonable suspicion. I simply do not know what that phrase means. I mean, let's look at what the law actually says. A law enforcement officer who suspects something may be afoot, is investigating in the parlance of this legislation, investigating a possible violation of the law. Right now, if an officer sees me on a street corner and thinks that I may be violating the law or have violated the law, the officer has a, quoting from the Colorado legislation, legal basis to come up to me and to say, hey, what's up? What are you doing? I think the Colorado legislation intends to make that sort of exchange impermissible. I'm not sure. I know for sure they haven't done it by the use of this kind of, legal gibberish. A legal basis, whatever that might mean. Once again, my sympathies to those of you in Colorado who are going to have to work all this stuff out. Once the officer makes a contact, okay, the officer then has to report extensive information to the employer about each and every contact the officer makes during the course of her or his day. What information has to be included? I'm only listing some of them here. There's more. They have to report the perceived demographic information about the person with whom they made contact, the time of the contact, the date of the contact, the location, the reason for the contact, the result of the contact, the duration of the contact, and just to make sure we've got it all covered, the officer must report all actions taken by the officer during the contact. You know, if officers have to comply with that rule, I don't think you really need to defund police departments anymore. I don't think police officers need to be thinking about depolicing in this era of high risk to law enforcement officers. Police officers in Colorado are going to be spending most of their day writing reports. I mean, think about it. You could end up writing a report on a 20-second contact with an individual, writing a report that would take you an hour to complete. And it's pretty easy to predict. You're going to see some law enforcement officers doing precisely that. Next up, we got a couple of post issues. First of all, by post, I mean peace officers, standards, and training agencies. First is the issue of certification. The executive order and Senate Democrats don't deal with that. Colorado does. And it says officers who are convicted of or plead to any inappropriate use of physical force or a crime involving the unlawful use or threatened use of physical force or of failing to intervene to prevent inappropriate use of force are automatically terminated. And post automatically and permanently revokes their certifications. What about that little thing we call due process? Not part of the legislation. Post is also given the ability to decertify officers who haven't completed post-mandated training. What if the officer's agency is not provided the opportunity to complete post-mandated training or the funding to complete post-mandated training? There's no exception in the law that would, for whatever reason, allow post to decide not to decertify those officers. It's a little grace period of time, but in the end, if the officer doesn't get the training, post will be allowed to decertify them. The second piece of post legislation in the Colorado statute is that post is going to have to create a database. So it's going to be a different database than the one I talked about earlier that's going to be maintained by the state. This database is going to be a post database, and it's going to contain information related to officer untruthfulness, repeated failure to provide post or to follow post training requirements, and it will include information about decertification and termination for cause. Most of this stuff is tracked by post agencies elsewhere. I was kind of surprised to see this appear in this legislation. Maybe it's not tracked in Colorado. Maybe it is. Part of this legislation is sort of a solution in search of a problem because agencies have done some of the things in this legislation. But in any case, there's going to be this post database, public database, that is going to be created. Protests. The executive order and Senate Democrats don't deal with the issue. Colorado does. And it says that there will be a prohibition of the use of all non-lethal projectiles in a manner that targets the head, pelvis, or back. Those of you who have used less than lethal projectiles know that that means you're not going to be able to use less than lethal projectiles. The legislation also prevents the discharge of what are referred to as kinetic impact projectiles indiscriminately into a crowd, and it prevents the use of chemical agents like tear gas or other chemical agents prior to issuing an order to disperse and allowing time and space for compliance with the order. Next up, qualified immunity. Executive order doesn't deal with it. Senate Democrats want to, their words, reform qualified immunity. We don't know what that means. By the way, the Supreme Court today or yesterday again ducked a series of cases in which it could address qualified immunity. So qualified immunity, as far as the Supreme Court is concerned, seems to still be just fine. In Colorado, Remember, we have this new cause of action for violation of the Colorado Constitution. The legislation specifies that a qualified immunity is not a defense to civil actions brought under the Colorado Constitution. All right, next up, statutes on criminal police conduct. I'm not going to specifically talk about the Colorado statute in this area because, as you've seen, there are criminal penalties that are kind of littered through against police, littered throughout the Colorado legislation. The executive order doesn't deal with it at all. The Senate Democrats have announced that what they want to do is change the federal statute, federal standard for when police conduct is criminal, from a standard of willfulness, which it is right now, to one where the officer acts with knowing or reckless disregard of the law. We'll have to see again how that thing is written. All right, training. Not in the executive order. It too is littered throughout Colorado. There's all sorts of unfunded mandates in the Colorado legislation for training. And the Senate Democrats have something kind of interesting. I actually had to kind of crack a smile on this. It will require federal law enforcement to provide racial bias and implicit bias training, and will also condition DOJ grant money on the same training being provided at the state and local level. The reason I kind of had to crack a smile on that is I've just spent a fair amount of time over the last few days looking at the science on implicit bias training. And you know, implicit bias training has been the rage in law enforcement for years now, right? Well over 10 years that agencies have been given this training. And as nearly as I can tell, there is no evidence that implicit bias training has any effect on any metric that a law enforcement agency or the public would be concerned about. It doesn't appear to have any impact on use of force or on citizen complaints or claims of racially motivated behavior. Implicit bias training, as nearly as I can tell, doesn't work. And now we're going to see Congress contemplating mandating implicit bias training for every law enforcement officer in the country that works for an agency that wants to get federal funds. Okay, and that's it. That's a summary of these two pieces of legislation, the Senate Democrats and the Colorado bill, and a summary of the executive order issued by President Trump. This is step one on a long road, right? And if you're listening to this podcast and you're wondering whether or not this is a movie that is going to play shortly in your neighborhood, you have to assess the political winds in your neighborhood because it may well be. And what you need to do is to be as prepared as you possibly can be. Every single law enforcement agency, every single law enforcement union listening to this podcast, you need to go get that Colorado legislation and you need to provide it to your lobbyists. You need to analyze it. You need to tear it apart piece by piece and compare it to the standards in your state, because that is legislation that other states are going to use as a model. And with all respect for the legislators in Colorado, what they wrote was terrible, simply terrible. It's something that is going to dissuade good people from being law enforcement officers in Colorado. It's pretty easy to predict. You're going to see a wave of resignations and early retirements in Colorado. It's a piece of legislation that is internally contradictory. It is one that sets up standards that are impossible to enforce and is strewn with unfunded mandates. This is a piece of legislation that from beginning till end was written, deliberated, passed, and signed by the governor in less than 2 weeks. All of you listening to this have to be prepared for that happening in your areas because it is a realistic possibility. This took everybody in Colorado by surprise. Everybody, I think, except the people who wrote the bill. Don't let it take you by surprise. All right, I will be back with some more special podcast, I am sure, over the balance of June. And then, of course, we'll be back with our regular First Thursday podcast in the start of July. I've already got some pretty amazing cases that I've been reading that don't deal with protests or police reform or any of these issues. These are really, really tough times that public safety agencies are going through right now. And truly, my heart goes out to you. My heart goes out to the people who, day in and day out, are out there just simply trying to do what we ask them to do, to enforce our laws with dignity, with respect, with care, and with compassion for those that they deal with. And these are the people who are being tarred with the same brush as Derek Chauvin's. That's wrong and that's unfair. All I can say to you is hang in there. We really, really appreciate what you're doing. And we'd be lost without you. This is Will Aitchison signing off.